Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back to the Daily Jungle Clones. Great show Tuesday with lots to get to. Matthew Stafford got paid, and I will tell you whether or not he's worth that dough. The Astros and Rangers are having a feud that nobody should be having right now. The Bills may have finally found their quarterback, Keith Wenning. And our Canadian clones have had a field day with Art Briles hiring and firing in the CFL, plus three great guests, actor and comedian Rob Riggle, Colts running back Frank Gore, and Western Michigan football coach Tim Lester made a hell of a jungle debut. Lots of show, a big day. Let's run it all down. Alvin, go ahead and roll yours. We start with Matthew Stafford. It's a very good day to be Matt Stafford. A very, very good day to be Matt Stafford. Because last night, the Detroit Lions' official Twitter account announced, and I quote, "We have agreed to terms with quarterback Matthew Stafford on a five-year contract extension through the 2022 season." And if you're Matthew Stafford, it'd be pretty hard not to want to retweet, quote tweet, and like that tweet all night long. That is pretty awesome. Five-year extension through 2022. And why? Well, according to those reports, that deal was worth a guaranteed $92 million. $50 million signing bonus. So with everything added in, the deal would average a reported $27 million per year, which passes Derek Carr as the highest paid player in football. And of course, as soon as the reports start to trickle out, there is a discussion to be had about that contract and about Stafford as a quarterback. I know that. Here's what we're not going to do here, clones. We're not going to make jokes about the city of Detroit. So that means I'm not looking to hear from Gino saying that Stafford is the only person in Detroit who does not have to put his clothes on layaway. I've heard that take before, Gino. I'm also not looking to hear from anybody who wants to re-gloss him Fat Stafford. He's an NFL quarterback. I'm willing to bet that he's in much better shape than you are. He's got a fat wallet, fat. Not a fat face. Fat. No team is throwing down that kind of dough for a doughy quarterback. You don't want the face of your franchise to have a soft chin. If you can't have a responsible conversation about this, we're not going to have a conversation about this. Now, the real question is he worth it? Is that guy worth $92 million? Is that guy worth $50 million up front? Is that guy worth a reported $27 million per year? Is he worth it? And the answer is yes. Hell yes. It's always yes. You're worth whatever somebody will pay you. And if the Lions will pay this guy $27 million per, he's worth $27 million per. And as always, you have to overpay a quarterback. You have to. That's how it works. Because as painful as it might be to pay a big-time quarterback, it's even more painful not to have a big-time quarterback. Just ask Jacksonville or Buffalo. You think they might want to trade places with the Lions. And yes, $27 million might seem like a really big number for a guy who's still looking for his first playoff win. But you do remember what the Lions were like before him, right? You do remember guys like Charlie Batch, John Kitna, Thunder Dan Orlovsky. You do remember 0-16. I know I do.
That's unbelievable!
Like it was yesterday. And it's not like Stafford came into a great situation and then just maintained. He came into a terrible situation, and he's led them to the playoffs three times. So, is he an elite quarterback or just a guy whose contract was up at the right time? Maybe a little bit of both. A top 10 quarterback who was up for a new deal right now. But at the same time, they won 9 games last year, and he had 8 fourth-quarter comebacks and game-winning drives. That's worth serious jack. And of course, right now, the only guy happier than Matthew Stafford is Aaron Rodgers. Because if Stafford got 27, Aaron is going to get even more. That's how it works. And if you've got a quarterback, you've got a shot. No quarterback, no chance. And Detroit has a quarterback. They do. They just do.
Congratulations.
So it was both his time, his turn, and the guy can play. We are joined by Rob Riggle. Let me start first with the fact that you are a big-time Chiefs fan. The Kansas City Chiefs are coming off a year, Rob, where they won the West. You know that. The division's going to be nasty once again this year. The Broncos and the Raiders in particular. We're about a week and a half away from the start of the season. How are you feeling right now, and are you eager to kick this thing off?
I'm nervous like I always am, but I'm optimistic like I always am. I like the Chiefs. I like them a lot. This division, though, I think you said it perfectly. It's nasty. You know, the Raiders are coming on strong. The Broncos are always a contender. But I like my Chiefs, and I like our coach. And I think, you know, we're going to be competitive like we have been for the past couple of years.
Now, they have been that, and Kansas City is an incredible sports town. And when the Royals won the World Series, it seemed like the entire city turned out for that parade. What would it be like if the Chiefs won the Super Bowl?
Oh, it's hard to let myself go there, but if I did take a minute and fantasize about it, it would be a full week shutdown for sure. I mean, it would not a day or two. It would be a full week shutdown. Nothing would happen in Kansas City except extreme partying. I just hope there would be enough of the city left after that week.
Rob Riggle joining us. You know, he just said you hate to let yourself go there, but before the Super Bowl earlier this year, you did call your shot. You predicted the Chiefs would be going to the Super Bowl in 2018. Now the year's about to start. How are you feeling about that prediction right now?
I still feel good about it. I'm one of those, I don't know if you want to call them pathetic fans or awesome fans. But I'm a believer. I believe every year it's a fresh start. And I believe, you know, if you never know with sports, you get on a roll, you get hot, they start believing in themselves, you know, the fans, the momentum, you know, you never know what could happen. So yes, I'm standing by my prediction, undefeated and Super Bowl champions.
Undefeated. They're going to run the table. Hey man, if you're gonna put yourself out there, Rob, just do it. Go all in. Just go all in. You got to do it.
Exactly.
Now, the thing is, it's not just a Chiefs thing. I mean, you're a huge Kansas City fan. In fact, you and your family have an annual tradition where you make a quick trip to Royal Spring training. How does that trip usually go, and what's it like to share that with the family?
It's awesome. It's one of those little things that I kind of enjoy as a dad because I pull my kids out of school. We play hooky for a day, and we road trip. We get up early in the morning. We road trip up to Surprise, Arizona. We catch a Royals game. Then we, you know, go out and have dinner and have fun. And my son and I play catch, and it's just it's a wonderful family bonding time. Next day we get up, we go visit with the Royals, actually take a little BP with some of the guys. Then we watch the afternoon game, and then we get on the road and come home. So it's always a cool thing, and it's great for the family, and the kids get to play hooky, and it's kind of fun for me, too.
See, I love that. I mean, I've got two kids, too, Rob. I've got a 16-year-old, a 12-year-old, and there used to be this thing, this conversation about how, hey, you don't pull those kids out of school. You never pull those kids out of school. But then you get further down the road, and you think about, you know what, you can. Sometimes you can, because those are lifetime memories. They will always remember that.
That's right. That's exactly right, and that's why I do it. And I have no shame or I have no apologies for it.
And not only that, but when you talk about them getting to meet some of the guys, is it true that at spring training this year, your son George got to play with Mike Sweeney and George Brett? If so, what was that moment like for you and for him?
You are awesome, Jim. Your team, whoever did the research, is awesome because this is true. My son, he's in the Little League. He got batting lessons from George Brett and Mike Sweeney. And it was probably one of the coolest things I've ever been a part of, just to watch him out there, you know, as George and Mike are explaining, you know, how to point the bat and where to look and how to step and the balance and, you know, things that, when I was a kid in Cub Scouts sitting out in left field because I sold enough candy bars watching George Brett, I never thought there would be a day when I'd be at spring training watching him teach my kid how to hit a baseball. So it was it was a dream come true, for sure.
You know, I'm so glad you feel that way, Rob, because, I mean, as well as you've done, it might seem like that's the new normal. That's just not that surreal a thing, but it's George Brett. I mean, it's George Brett. George Brett's just one of those guys, one of the ultimate it guys. And if that's anything other than awesome at any point, we have to all rethink it. Now, in terms of your situation, you played in the American Century Championship Celebrity Golf Tournament earlier this summer. That's one of the really big ones. What's that experience like for you?
I loved it. I mean, I love golf, so I you know, it's such a neat environment, and seeing all these really amazing athletes out there playing, it was a blast. I loved every minute of it. It's not what I would call traditional golf, because you're when you leave the green and you walk to the next tee box, you're taking 100 pictures, you're throwing you're signing baseballs and throwing stuff, and you're signing body parts, and it gets weird fast. But it's a total blast, and if you hang out with the right, you play golf with some of the right guys, it's a good time for sure.
It gets weird fast, but weird is always good. Hey, listen, it's not normal, but you're out there with some of the most hyper-competitive people you'll ever see. And even if you're not a pro athlete, that doesn't mean that you're not competitive. So when you're out there, are you looking to have a little fun, or do the competitive juices start to flow, and are you looking to beat everybody around you?
Oh, I mean, look, I think I'm competitive. And I here's the thing. I always want to do my best. That's all I'm trying to do, is do my best. But nobody cares about my game. Nobody's out there to see Robert Gould's golf game. They could care less. So I also have to remember to have a lot of fun. I think that's what people want to see, and so that's one of the reasons I'm there. So I try to balance, doing my best and not beating myself up when I screw up, with having a lot of fun and interacting with folks that come out to the tournament.
Hey, Rob, do I have this right? Do you play at Sherwood at times? That is an unbelievable track.
Yes, I do. Wow, you are awesome. You got to be CIA or something.
that was not hard to find out, but that is a beautiful, beautiful track. What's your best day on that track?
That was a, let's see, I think I shot a 78.
Oh, dude.
Is the best I've ever done there. But then, quite literally, and I mean this, 2 days later I played again and I shot a 90.
Mm.
So it's just golf.
Freaking golf. That is golf. All right, really quickly, you spent a little time with President Clinton over the summer. What was that like?
Well, I only met him briefly. It was actually at the Tahoe tournament. He came and spoke to us and thanked us for being there, all the participants, because of the charity component of that tournament. And it was interesting to hear him speak. It was nice. He talked about how he and former President Bush were working together on several initiatives to bring Americans together, which, I loved hearing that, especially in these days. So it was really nice to hear. I was just listening, and I happened to be lucky enough to get a picture with him.
Good. All right, so you're working with Dos Equis and the search for the most interesting fan in college football. This is going to end with one fan being crowned the most interesting fan in college football and being enshrined in the College Football Hall of Fame. It sounds too good to be true. Lay it out for me. How does it work?
That's what I thought. I couldn't believe they're doing it, but they are. Dos Equis is searching for the most interesting fan in college football. I know they're out there. I see them every week. So all they got to do is post a picture or a video on their Instagram or Twitter, or go right to dosequis.com with the hashtag most interesting fan search. And if you do that, you're entered. It's that easy. And if you win, you're going to be a statue of you is going to be put in the College Football Hall of Fame. Now, that's some serious bragging rights right there.
For sure,
so,
it is.
If people want to get in on this, I mean, I'm just trying to bring the fans to the mountain, so to speak.
The scenes from Houston continue to be devastating. And if you've got a pulse or a soul, you cannot see the images or hear the accounts from family and friends in the Houston area and not be heartbroken and not want to do something to help. You just can't. In light of everything that has happened, the Astros and the Rangers are going to play each other in Tampa starting tonight. And I have to say, the only thing more bizarre than two Texas teams playing a series in Florida is the fact that people are getting all worked up about it. Houston President Reed Ryan said that the Astros suggested that they swap the home series that was scheduled for Houston this week with one scheduled for Arlington in September, but the Rangers said no. Reacting to that, Astros pitcher Lance McCullers tweeted, quote, "Classy as always, should be absolutely ashamed. Greed never takes off days, apparently. Stay strong, hashtag H-Town. We hope to be home soon." So what about the Rangers? Why are they doing this? What do they have to say for themselves? What's their thought process? GM John Daniels said, quote, we were willing to play this series anywhere the Astros and MLB wanted, including here in Arlington, end quote. They also said that they were willing to provide all revenue from an Arlington series this week to the Astros. He also said the team did not reject the idea of the series swap for competitive or financial reasons, but because they didn't want to inconvenience their fans who had tickets to the September series, and they didn't have to want to go to them and tell them they had to use those tickets this week. All right, fine. I guess, whatever. I'm not sure that's the best reason ever. I mean, when you look at everything that's happening in Houston right now, I think that's a little more inconvenient than having to figure out a way for your fans who had tickets to a baseball game next month to either get tickets to a game this week or maybe issue them a refund. I mean, you want to talk about inconvenience. And swapping series with the Astros would have meant that the Rangers would have been on the road for four of their last five series of the season, which would have been tough. But again, not the end of the world. Regardless, when the Astros and the Rangers could not come to an agreement, Major League Baseball stepped in and they moved that series to Tampa. Personally, I don't care. I really don't care. Houston essentially wrapped up the division in June. The Rangers are 15 games out of first. They'd have to jump over four teams to get into the wild card. It's doable, but again, that's not the point. None of this is the point. When people are dying and being evacuated in Houston, who cares where three baseball games are played? It's really not that important. I don't care if the games were in Arlington with the Rangers as the home team, or Arlington with the Astros as the home team, or Florida with no home teams, or on the moon. It doesn't matter. And if you're getting bogged down in the he said part of this and debating about which team would benefit the most, either financially or competitively, from moving or not moving, then you don't get it either. This isn't the thing. Sports are great. Sports are important. But at a time like this, when people are losing their actual homes, it's pretty embarrassing to be arguing about where to play three baseball games. Could the Rangers have handled this better? Maybe. Was their response a little bit off? Probably. Are they the greedy bastards trying to work a hurricane to their advantage? Doubt that. As Rangers outfielder Delino DeShields, who spent 5 years with the Astros, so he's been on both sides of this, he posted on Twitter, quote, "I want people to understand that what is happening down there is way bigger than baseball. I know the fans and families and friends who live in Houston are upset that baseball probably won't be played in Houston this week, along with the other cities down there. Everyone wants to point fingers at each other, calling each other names. That the Rangers are classless. That nobody has respect for anybody. That's BS. I have teammates and coaches who either live down there or have family down there that are being affected by this. But we want to call each other names and disrespect each other because of what? We're rivals? That's so irrelevant right now. And at this second, I'm pretty disappointed at how people are reacting to this." End quote. Truth. Absolute truth. Could not have said that any better myself. He nailed that. Colts running back Frank Gore. You've got one more preseason game, then the regular season gets underway. So you said it's been a great camp. Kind of lay that out for me. How has camp gone? And then how forward, or how much are you looking forward to getting this season started finally?
Man, I'm, you know, a long training camp. You know, I think we got better each day as a team, you know, competing. You know, and I think, you know, this last third preseason game as a team, we look pretty good. You know, now we could, you know, take steps toward the season and get ready for the Rams.
Frank Gore's my guest. Frank, your head coach Chuck Pagano said yesterday that there is no timetable for Andrew Luck to return. Knowing that there's a chance that he'll be out at the start of the regular season, do you yourself feel even more pressure to step up and carry more of a load on the offense?
Well, you know, I feel like whenever my number get called, I'm going to try my best, you know, to do what I have to do to help this team be successful. But I think, you know, we'll be fine. You know, that's a big hit that, you know, our leader not playing. But the young quarterback Scott Tolzien and the other guy, they've been competing and getting better each day. And you know, whenever you know our weapons get an opportunity to make a play, we got to make it. So you know, we looking forward to the challenge when we play the Rams and you know see what it do.
You know, Frank, you and I have had these conversations for a number of years, but I feel like this next point that I'm going to make is something that you and I have talked about for several years. You're coming off yet another 1,000-yard season, and yet there are still folks who are saying you're getting older and you can't do it again. I would argue that anybody who bets against you is a fool, but do you like hearing those critics, and does that type of talk motivate you?
Yeah, it do motivate me. And I've been hearing what I can't do my whole life, so I don't let it get to me. It just push me even harder, you know, in the off season. And, you know, like I said, I'm blessed to still be playing this game. I've been through a lot in my career. And so, you know, I'm not worrying about that. Like I say, I went out, I had a great camp. You know, I touched the rock last week, had a couple great carries. And, you know, as a team, I think we got better last week. And now, you know, our focus is on the Rams. And, you know, we'll see where to go from there, you know.
Coach, running back Frank Gore, my guest. You mentioned your offseason. Before I ask you about that, I want to make this point, too. You have not missed a game since 2010, which is remarkable for any player, but especially for a running back who plays with the toughness that you play with. How much pride do you take in the fact that your teammates know that they can count on you every single Sunday?
Well, you know, that's big. You know, like I said before, I've been blessed, man. And, you know, early on in my career when I got drafted, you know, that's one of the things they said. I was very injury prone, and you know, like I say, God been over me my whole career since I got in the NFL. And man, that's why I take it one day at a time. I train hard, and when I'm on the practice field, you know, I go hard. You know, because you never know when you know that moment does come when you can't play the game. So that's why I compete the way I do.
Hey Frank, what's your off-season regimen and training like that you're able to stay on top the way you have?
I would say, you know, I've been training with my Pete Bomarito and Adam since I came out of college. So they kind of know me, you know, and they know as I get older, they kind of, you know, they watch me very close. They look at me very close. And, you know, and another thing, me training with other younger guys at my positions, you know, competing with the younger guys, I think kind of keep me honest. And, you know, When I see myself competing and keeping up, or even beating some of the younger guys at position drills, or you know, that let me know that I'm gonna be okay during the year, you know.
Colts running back Frank Gore joining us. Yeah, absolutely. Now, Frank, when you look at it, you're currently number 8 on the all-time rushing list for career yardage. There's a really good chance by the end of the season, if you do what you normally do, you could be in the top 5 all-time. Now, I'm listening to what you're saying. I know you're focused on one day at a time, one game at a time, and winning is the thing, but what's it like to see your name listed with the great players in NFL history?
Man, that's a blessing. You know, for my name to be mentioned, there's a lot of great guys like Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith, and the other guys, Eric Dickerson and Marshall Faulk, and, you know, the list goes on, man. And, you know, me coming out of college with 2 ACL and people write me off before I got here, and I'm still going. And now, you know, I got an opportunity, my name to be mentioned with them guys. So, I mean, that's a blessing, man. That's a blessing.
Talking to Frank Gore. Frank, also I mentioned you won the 2016 Art Rooney Sportsmanship Award. Now, this is an award that's voted on by league players each season. Quote, it's presented each year to an NFL player who best demonstrates the qualities of on-field sportsmanship, including fair play, respect for the game and opponents, and integrity in competition. End quote. What's the honor mean to you, and then especially the fact that it's coming from your peers, your fellow players around the league?
That's very big, you know. That let me know that I'm playing the game the right way, and a lot of guys see the way I play the game and they respect it. So, you know, that's very big. Getting that award last year.
The thing is, during the video presentation that accompanied that award, Alex Smith talked about how you did absolutely everything you could to win, and that, quote, there are certain teammates that I think 34 years from now you'll never forget, and they're rare, those types, and Frank is one of those for me. But how important is it for you to know that your teammates knew that they could always count on you and that you'd give it everything you had in every single game? That's a former teammate who said that.
Man, you know, I saw when Alex said that, and I just came in together. He saw, you know, with me and him went through the tough ups and downs. You know, even he also had some tough years when he first got out. And, you know, just, man, hearing him saying that was very big. You know, I respect Oz a whole lot. And I respect a lot of guys around the league, and he was voting for me to receive that award. So I'm very thankful, and I'm blessed, you know, to keep playing and also getting that award, you know.
Hey, listen, it's clear that you're a role model for your teammates and other players around the league. You mentioned that when you work out with the younger guys and you can outwork these guys, you know that you can still play the game. But clearly, when you came in, there were guys that you looked up to as well. Who were some of the guys that were good mentors for you when you first came in the league?
Well, you know, I always talked to a lot of my guys, like Edwin James. I talked to my boy Clint Portis. But one guy who I used to love watching, one film I used to love watching, was LaDainian Tomlinson. You know, because when my first year starting, I had North Turner, and he was our coordinator in San Fran. And, you know, San Diego had similar offenses, so I used to watch this film a lot. But another guy who I talked to a lot, who I called for advice, is Marshall Faulk. You know, just, you know, wanted to give small keys on how did he have success, and he helped me out a lot. He still do help me right now today.
Back in the day, I was told that this show would never, ever work in Canada. I remember the first time somebody said to me, do you know what? There are stations in Canada that might be willing to carry the show. What do you think? And I said, that's incredible. Much like I said when I was in San Diego way back in the day, and we had this conversation about how there might be stations up and down the coast here in Cali that will carry the show. We can syndicate it. We can regionalize it, and then we can make it national. What do you think of that? And much as I said later on about Canada, that's great. Let's do it. So back in the day, there was the rap that it won't work. It won't work in Canada. It'll never work in Canada. And it has, in a very big way. Canadians have embraced the show and made it their own. This show is so much better because of Canada. Now, that said, if I'm being honest, it's not like we talk about the CFL that much. We'll talk hockey. We'll talk Blue Jay baseball. We'll talk Raptors basketball. We don't talk a lot of CFL. So you know that when I do Bust Out and I start talking CFL, and in particular, the Hamilton Tiger Cats, either something extremely good happened or something really bad happened. And for the Tiger Cats this year, it's been pretty bad. In fact, really, really bad. To start with, they're 0-8. I know the CFL is a little different from the NFL, but I don't think it's so different that 0-8 is a good thing. And then to make matters worse, they did announce yesterday that they had hired Art Briles as an assistant coach. Yes, the same Art Briles. That Art Briles. The one who was suspended with intent to terminate last year at Baylor after a very serious investigation into the school and football programs' handling of sexual assault and domestic violence allegations. So, you could lose every game for 3 years, and that still would not be nearly as bad as trying to hire Art Briles. It's not, and even more, it's not like it was some random person who did it. June Jones is the head coach there. He should know better. Even if management obviously didn't, he should know better. How dense and clueless do you have to be as an organization to hire Art Briles? Look, I know you might get excited when you see his resume, but then maybe you ask yourself, how is this coach with a 99-65 record in college available? And if you don't know the answer, maybe fire up the old Google machine and see what it says about Arthur Ray Briles. There are literally books published on what happened at Baylor. But it wasn't a matter of ignorance. Tiger Cats apparently were aware of this. Team CEO Scott Mitchell told the Hamilton Spectator, quote, "We just thought it was a very serious situation, but we also felt that after talking to dozens of people, people we trust, people we admire, that Art Briles is a good man. It was caught in a very bad situation. Clearly, some serious mistakes were made along the way, but we feel strongly that people deserve second chances, and that's what we decided to do with Art Briles." End quote. Wait, what? A good man that was caught in a bad situation. We're talking about the head coach, not a janitor in the football facility. He was the guy running the situation, not caught in the situation, running it. And if you Googled his name, you'd find a lot of other very interesting pieces. I mean, never mind them talking to dozens of people they admire, dozens of people they trust. How about you just go to the Lapper and hit Google search? How about you do that? There are literally books published on what happened at Baylor and the fact that Art Briles was not, quote, just a good guy in a bad situation. He was running that situation. And the Tiger Cats were aware of that. If you Googled his name, you might find this piece from the Houston Chronicle that reads, Briles and former AD Ian McCaw allegedly discussed a gang rape that involved five football players. Rather than go through proper channels to report the incident, McCaw kept it in-house, went to Briles and his staff. When he did, Coach Briles studied the names on the piece of paper, quote, those are some bad dudes, Coach Briles told an assistant coach. The document states, why was she around those guys? End quote. That's Briles, reportedly looking at a list at his own players who were allegedly involved in a gang rape and said those are, quote, some bad dudes. And then said that the woman should not have been around them. Dude, they were on your football team. They were not some random, anonymous, horrible dudes that showed up in a police report. They were horrible dudes that were on your team. But his response was to blame her for her choice. Blame her for hanging out with some bad dudes. So that's not a good guy in a bad situation. That's a bad guy recruiting really bad guys and trying to cover up a really bad situation. In the very least, enabling a very bad situation. And that's only one example. So Canada, if you live this thing for the past 24 hours, go ahead and hit me up right now. Jamie in Hamilton. Good to have you, Jamie. How are you?
Good. How are you, Jim?
I'm great.
This is the last 48 hours has just been a complete gong show. We've had, first off, I cannot stand this guy, and that goes with the rest of the city. He's a monster. He's an enabler. He has no business being in football anymore. He had his chance. He screwed up. And we're actually happy as Hamiltonians that he's no longer here. But to the segment you said earlier about how they set out a statement about why they fired him, I guess they didn't include the fact that there was thousands of fans giving back their tickets to say, we don't want to watch the game if he's coaching. So as of today, we're happy again. Go Hamilton, and let's hope we win on Labor Day.
Jamie, as of right now, you are racked. Great phone call. September 2nd, Tim Lester is my guest. Tim, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, Tim. I'm doing great. Now, as I mentioned, you were a record-setting quarterback at Western Michigan. You were the quarterback's coach at Western Michigan. You are now back as head coach. What's it mean to you to be the head coach at your alma mater? I mean, is there really any way to put that into words?
No, it's hard. You know, it happens in weird spurts when you're doing random things during stretches or walking in certain hallways where you have memories of different things that happened to you in the past, you know? So it's been exciting, especially to take it over where it's at right now. You know, Coach Fleck did an unbelievable thing. So taking it over with a bunch of all-conference players coming back, it's a great feeling, and we're excited to have these players back to hopefully continue to build on what was started.
Tim Lester making his jungle debut. All right, so your football journey is really pretty interesting in the sense that when you played for the first time, they put you at right guard. What was your time as a right guard like? Did you enjoy that at all?
Oh, it was miserable. It was miserable.
Right?
I tried to quit after my first day. My parents said, hell no, no way. And they bought me these huge pads to wear on my arms. They said, suck it up. I played offensive line for my whole first year, and then I moved to quarterback, and that was it from there.
It's a good thing. I love that. Now, you eventually made that move, and you put up huge numbers at Warrenville South High School. The plan was for you to take an official visit to Florida to potentially play under Steve Spurrier, but before you could take that visit, you injured your knee in a playoff game. Exactly what happened, and what was the injury?
You know, I tore my VMO. I basically dislocated and split my kneecap in half. Did it by myself. Changed directions. My knee went one way. I went the other. And I went from wanted to play for Spurrier more than anything in the world. I was back with actual airline tickets. I already had my airline tickets for my official visit on December 4th going there. And, you know, and then they dropped me, obviously. And you know, luckily got to play him later on in my career.
Tim, splitting your kneecap in half and having part of your knee go one way and the other part go the other way sounds horrible. Yet despite that injury, you were determined to play in the next playoff game, and you tricked the trainers into letting you play. How did you do that, and what happened next?
I did. It was, you know, it became a, back in the day, they had the extension thing for your leg, and it was all just pressurized. So all week long, I asked the guy what test I was going to have to do to play, and he said, as long as your pressure for your left knee is as good as your right, you can play. Well, shoot. When I did my good leg, I knew exactly what PSI to keep it at. So then I did my injured leg as hard as I could, and the trainer at the end said, wow, your injured leg is stronger than your good leg. And I'm just like, I can't believe this guy's buying this.
Tim, I can't believe that you even had that thought process. I mean, if my knee cracks in half, I think I'm just going to take a knee and shut it down. What were you thinking? Why were you so determined to be out there? What put you out there with an injury like that?
You know, it was one of those things, and I did ask the question when the doc came in. He said, hey, listen, you're going to have surgery. There's nothing. I asked him, is there anything worse I can do? Is there something I can happen that's going to make this injury worse? He said, no. He said, there's no way it's going to be worse than it is. It's going to hurt like hell. But you're not going to. Nothing worse is going to happen if you can find your way onto that field. And I obviously, it's your senior year. You want to do everything you can and get out there. And I lasted about a quarter. Couldn't move at all, but scored a couple, and then finally got hit again. And all it took was one hit, and I was done again.
Tim Lester joining us. All right, so Western Michigan was one of the first programs to recruit you, and you went to visit after the injury. What was it like when you first stepped on campus, and how did you know that was the place for you?
You know, it's weird. I think everybody in recruiting nowadays, I have this vision of what college looks like. I mean, everyone has a different vision of what the campus would look like, what the stadium would look like, what the locker room would look like. And for some reason, the moment I came here, you know, I chose here over, not everybody dropped me. It was here and really West Virginia were my two choices. And, you know, for me, I started looking at different things. I'd never been hurt. I started looking at, can I play? How many quarterbacks do they have? I was an idiot 17-year-old that didn't even look at the depth chart of any teams. Because I thought I'd beat everybody out. So all of a sudden I realized that here I could redshirt and maybe start for 4 years. And so I chose it here. I love the campus, love the community, and got to play 44 college football games because of it.
Western Michigan head coach Tim Lester joining us. Now, you interviewed for the head coaching job there a number of years back, and you've said that, quote, I told the AD Kathy, quote, we need to focus here. And then P.J. Fleck got the job and called it a six-hour radius, which is way cooler than I could have come up with. It was the same thing. It just sounded cooler, end quote. So how different are you now as a coach than you were when you first interviewed for that job?
You know, I use the six-hour radius word. It's a cooler way of saying the same thing. I just feel like every school I've been at, from Syracuse to Purdue to the Division III level, all schools have their formula or where they can recruit and where they get kids from. And I believe that this six-hour radius, when I was here and we were really successful in the late 90s, that's what works. So when I didn't get the job and I watched PJ's press conference and he talked about the six-hour radius and how he was going to recruit, and I watched him do it, and just like we did it in the 90s, late in the 90s, that was kind of our coach's montage. And we had a ton of good players out of Chicago, Detroit, Indianapolis, Cleveland. We're in a really unique area that we can get to some major cities and get a lot of good players. There's a lot of population here. And watching him do it. So now I call it a six-hour radius, too. I can definitely learn.
Okay, well, you call it a six-hour radius, but you've also got your own, too. And the one you arrived with is Let's Ride. Let's Ride. And RIDE stands for Responsibility, Integrity, Development, and Effort. What's the phrase mean to you, and why is that so important to the program?
You know, and I always talk to my guys about begin with the end in mind. You know, and I always say every time you have an interaction with everybody in the community or someone in the media or someone on campus, you know, what do you want them to say about you at the end? Because that's what you should make all your decisions on. And that is, those are the words that we would like people to think about us. On the flip side, we have the same acronym on the field where we talk about relentless intensity, discipline, and execution. And, you know, I said, hey, the next morning when USC wakes up on Sunday morning, what do you want them to say about you? And those were the words that they came up with. And that just kind of continues to remind us every single day when we're making all the decisions on how we're going to work, is you just need to remember what you want to stand for. It makes it a lot easier to show up every single day to practice.
Right. And you mentioned USC. You open up against number four, USC, and then you can chase that with a trip to Michigan State. A lot of coaches might want to break things in slowly in their first two games as the head coach of a program. So what's it like for you to jump into the deep end like that?
Oh, it's exciting. I mean, shoot, it's definitely not going to be easy. You know, I always tell my guys, you know, when you were in your driveway when you were a kid and you were taking that last second shot, you were never saying you were up 30 when you took the shot. You were always down one or down two and shooting a three-pointer, and you want to be in that spotlight. And our kids are yearning to have a chance. They just came off a Cotton Bowl where they got to play in the Jerry Jones Dome. So they're excited to be on the stage. It's a great opportunity for the guys that we have to go up against an unbelievable team and an unbelievable quarterback they got over there.
We go to Germany. Raider Mike. Mike, what's going on? How are you, bud?
Thanks, Mac. Thanks for putting me up. First of all, you know, I'm a serviceman, so I'm not a big Colin Kaepernick fan, but it's an absolute disgrace that at least 10 teams in the NFL don't have this guy on his roster, distraction or not. Now, apologies for missing the Schmackoff gig. I mean, Silk Bra told me it was a party. I know that, but I also know what it meant to you, Jim, and also to Lef. But, you know, Uncle Sam's had me busy. Right now I'm running a maintenance mission over here for Hertz. We're doing some trash hauling in our theater. We've also been able to cruise the Rhine, doing a little capsule watching, and, of course, representing the Raider Nation. First of all, Jim, shout out to up-and-coming jungle legend Derek Carr, whose preseason line is 24 for 26, 244 yards passing and 4 TDs. I mean, a blistering 128 passer rating. I mean, that is hotter than the new Cruz Pedregon racing helmet. You know, Vance Mech, the pundits, they're already whining about the Raiders' defense, but with Carr running this offense and Marshawn Lynch pounding the freaking rock, this Raider team is going to be fine. I'm predicting right now 11-5 with the first-round bye, home field playoff game, and Kansas City in the rearview mirror. That is a lock. Oh, and a quick shout-out to Mama Lynch. Always hug your mama. Lastly, I'm not huge on preseason stats, but with our 12 penalties last week against Dallas, I can see the Zebras are already in midseason form. We led the damn league in penalties last year. You know, this is an entirely different 12-4 Raider team. New owner, new GM, new coaches. Hell, 1,500 different players have worn the silver and black since 1960, yet every single one of them are a freaking idiot when they put on the uniform. We continuously lead the league in penalties. It's a phenomenon. I can't explain it, Vance Mack. Carr, Mack, these guys, they're choir boys. The culture on this team, second to none. But the NFL, the refs, they continue with this decade-long bias against this team. Back the hell off. That's all I got to say. I'll check in with you when I get back to the States.
Raider Mike. Rock him. Phones, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you and it. Remember, the new show, the Jim Rome Podcast, drops today. Our first guest is Aaron Rodgers. Find it on iTunes, Google Play, or anywhere else you can find a podcast. Have a great day. Thank you for listening, and check back tomorrow for more Daily Jungle.